Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi everyone, my name is Brianna Contreras and I'm editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this week's episode, I spoke with Peter Durlock, Chief Strategy Officer of Nuance. The two of us discussed how artificial intelligence drives values for patients and providers, and how AI tools and solutions are helping health systems reach the quadruple aim of care. Hello, Peter, how are you?
I'm good, Brianna. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time today to join me for an episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast.
Happy to. Thanks for the invitation.
No problem. So to get started, can you first just tell our listeners about your role at Nuance and the mission of the organization?
Yeah. So I sort of have a split role. My formal title is I'm the Executive Vice President, Chief Strategy Officer of Nuance. So fundamentally, I have kind of two primary roles. One is sort of more classic strategy role, which is really helping the company figure out, you know, what businesses to be in, what solutions do we want to offer, and what problems do we want to solve. And the second part is when we do attempt to do sort of large disruptive innovations on the product side, we've learned over the years, as many other companies have, that to give those incubations the best chance of success, you need to break them out from the mainstream operating team inside the company, because those teams are so caught up in the day-to-day business that they have that can be often, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars of business. So sort of large disruptive incubations, especially on the healthcare side, get incubated on my team, and either we're successful, in which case they grow and then we move them back into the mainstream operating unit, or they're not successful and we kill them. So I have these sort of both an operating incubation role and sort of the more classic strategy role.
Okay, great. Thank you. And just if I could get a little bit more background on Nuance.
Sure. Yeah. So Nuance is the leader in as you asked in the first question. So apologies about that. Sort of we're the leader in conversational ambient AI into certain verticals where we're solving very sort of large scale business problems. So we have two operating divisions, the healthcare division that uses conversational ambient AI to really help produce better clinical and financial outcomes by improving things like clinical documentation, imaging, coding, clinical documentation improvement. So heavily focused traditionally on their healthcare provider segment, or really around, you know, clinical workflows, revenue cycle. And then we have a sister division called our enterprise division, which is the leading provider of omni-channel consumer engagement technology. Think of that as bot capability. So whether making an IVR better when you call a contact center, interacting by SMS, text, website, and we support leading brands in the world, whether folks like JP Morgan, Vanity Fair, FedEx, UPS, American Airlines, Humana, Cigna. That technology also is relevant on the healthcare provider side as we look to help automate the digital front door for health systems as they try to create a more wonderful experience for patients, which is, as you know, today, not always the most seamless.
Right, right. And to kind of just summarize in a question, you know, what you just described. So really, just for more so my understanding, so more so conversational AI is more based on just, you know, the interaction between physician and patient, let's say, or...
So it's basically using what we mean by conversational AI is really whether you talk, type, text, anything to do with language effectively, where there's interactions between people and machines. So yes, we do a lot, as we'll talk about more today, the interaction when you go see your physician around how that information gets documented in the medical record is one example of our AI brought to bear. Another example is if you're as a patient and trying to contact a healthcare provider organization and book an appointment, check on your lab results, maybe you do that over the phone, maybe you do that on a website through a chatbot, maybe you do that through texting. We have technology For that, we also have AI to bring to bear around imaging. So not only around documenting, if you go to get a CT of your knee or an MRI of your head, not only do we help radiologists use our conversational AI to document what they see in the image, but as I think we'll talk about today, we're also putting a platform in place as AI comes into the market to look at pixels or the actual images to help find things that are on the image that maybe are missed or not seen in their full light, as you will. So really AI to bring intelligence into these conversational dialogues and also as a platform to use AI on the pixel side, which I'll talk about more in a few minutes.
Wonderful, thank you. So kind of just to, you know, break it down a little bit before we get deeper in the conversation, if you could just share the rise of artificial intelligence in healthcare just in the last few years and, you know, what it's doing overall for healthcare operations.
Yeah, it's a great question. Actually, we laugh at Nuance a lot because, you know, we've been an AI company for a long time, but didn't really call ourselves an AI company until a number of years ago. In healthcare, the first mainstream widespread use of AI was in speech recognition, which is where Nuance came from. So we have products like Dragon Medical today and PowerScribe that respectively about 60%+ of all physicians use Dragon Medical to dictate their clinical notes into the EHR. And PowerScribe is used by about 80% of all radiologists to document their clinical interpretations of radiological images. Those two products came to light in healthcare in the 90s, almost 20 years ago, both of them. And now they're both, you know, have significant presence. So speech recognition was the real first and still most widely adopted use of AI. About 3 to 5 years ago, the AI technology got good enough that new use cases have started to emerge pretty rapidly. So this won't be completely all encompassing, but they fall into a couple of areas. Number one is AI is being used a lot now on the life sciences side around drug discovery. You'll see a lot of information around that in terms of modeling the genome, finding new variants of molecules coming together to form new drugs. So that's one big area that there's a lot of effort on. The other big area that is emerging, which I'll talk about more, is on the imaging side. Again, using AI to look at pixels or images to start to do sort of an initial read or scan of the image for information that's represented there clinically, some of which can't be seen by the human eye, which we'll talk about later. And I'd say the two other big areas are on patient engagement. So using AI for these bots, whether it's again on the phone channel for IVR or on a website for chat or texting to help automate some of those transactions or make them more efficient. And the last one, which is still very early, but has a lot of promises around clinical decision support. So can you use AI to look at the medical information of that patient, compare it to clinical guidelines and other patients to provide other insights to clinicians around what is wrong with the patient, what should be done. That use case has tremendous value. It's earlier than the other ones because clinically it's much more complicated. And if you're wrong, the consequences are much higher than if someone calls an IVR and it makes a mistake. You know, it might be frustrating, but it's not going to kill somebody. Whereas clinically, obviously, it can have a real effect. So building the capabilities and the trust there will take a little bit longer than in some of the other areas where the technology is a little bit more advanced and the downside of making a mistake, as I said, is not as high. But those buckets that I mentioned are probably the major areas where you're seeing, you know, different levels, but pretty rapid evolvement of AI in healthcare.
Wonderful. Thank you. So for my next question, how are AI tools eliminating work and making patient care more effective? Maybe more so, how is it benefiting providers?
Yes. So I'd say, I'll use a couple again from the buckets that I described before, a couple areas. The use case that's most advanced, again, based on the history of AI, is in this clinical documentation arena. So as you know, probably know about, there's an existential burnout problem with docs, nurses, and everything. They were burned out way before COVID because many reasons, but one of the primary reasons that's articulated consistently through research is the administrative requirements of physicians heavily focus on things like documentation is intense. And in fact, as you probably are aware, most clinicians spend twice as much time creating their notes about the patient visits than actually seeing and taking care of patients, which is kind of stunning if you think about that. So this has led to a burnout problem where over 50% of clinicians are technically defined as burned out, and nurses are even in a worse shape in many cases. So one of the big areas of AI here is how to try to reduce that overhead, that administrative overhead of documenting, you know, what you discussed with the patient. So right. As a leader in that space, we have this product I mentioned called Dragon Medical, which is used by about 60% of docs, where the physician actually explicitly dictates to the EHR. They say, they describe what they did, what the orders are, what the clinical history is, what medications they want to put the patient on, et cetera, what the next steps, and they dictate it, and the system explicitly translates what they said into text and other data inside the EHR. That sort of the next generation of that is a technology we call ambient clinical intelligence, where instead of the physician having to explicitly dictate everything, the system with patient consent actually records the conversation that you have when you go see your physician. So you're just talking to the doctor. The system records that, transcribes what the patient and the physician and other people in the room said, and then uses AI to convert that colloquial conversation you have with a doctor into a highly accurate structured note, as if the clinician had manually dictated that in the old way. And that is really exploding. And the reason that is because when clinicians see you in the traditional world, in addition to talking to you and listen, they have a separate track going on in their head, trying to keep track of what they're going to document in the EHR after they finish the visit. It's very distracting, and it puts a huge cognitive load on the clinician. So with Ambient Clinical Intelligence, the product we call the Dragon Ambient Experience, or DAX, they don't have to have that cognitive load during the visit because they know the system is doing it for them. So they spend all the time listening and focusing on the patient. And it's really amazing to hear the feedback of the clinicians. On average, they save about 7 minutes of time during the visit, which can be a couple hours during the day that they can use to spend more time with patients or less after hour time. The notes are better. They can generate additional revenue or quality because they have more time, to the point where about 90% of clinicians would recommend this solution and can't imagine going back to the old way. And really cool too is the patients feel it. So many of our clients do surveys with the patient pre and post the visit with the same physician pre and post deployment of DAX. And you're seeing 80 to 90% improvement where patients say the physician's more engaged, they spend more time, they explain things more clearly. So by taking that sort of distracting process out of the middle of the engagement, both the clinicians and the patients feel it. So that's sort of one big example of what AI can do for the provider.
That's great. And that was actually going to go into my next question was, you know, what is it doing for the patient? But I mean, you pretty much highlighted it. It's more so engagement. But I guess, is there anything else, you know, how it can benefit the patient? Other than maybe just a better engagement between the physician and patient?
Yeah, so we don't have a ton of data yet sort of downstream, but they definitely have subjectively responded that they understand what's more about what, you know, what the doctor is thinking and doing. Mm-hmm. One of the things we're thinking of doing is also enabling with provider consent to share that recording and note, the structured note with the patient. So if you imagine if you went home and you listened, but you don't remember exactly what the doctor said, or it was your mom, what happens if you could go back through that conversation and hear exactly what the physician said and what they told you to do? That could be very powerful, you know, for patients. I will say the other big thing we're doing on the patient side with AI, as I referred to earlier, one of the other big buckets of use cases is on the patient engagement side, outside of the time you know that you're in the physical encounter, which is what I just mentioned before, physical or virtual, but the patient encounter, which I don't, there are all these other points where you interact with the health system or the provider, which you know are very cumbersome. How do you find a doctor? How do you book appointment? How do you get your lab results? If you have questions, how do you do that? How does the health system interact with you to make sure you're following up with their advice? Did you take the meds after your discharge? Did you schedule a primary care visit after your surgery? There are all kinds of things that fall through the gaps, from mundane things like I can't get a hold of someone in the access center to book an appointment, to more complex things. You know, did you follow the instructions? Do you need to see a physician after some surgical encounter? So the other big sort of patient-facing area, I would say, is this patient engagement piece. So today, the challenge is that most health systems don't have sophisticated communications mechanisms to interact with patients for a variety of use cases, some of which I mentioned earlier. They might have a patient access center, which is their call center, very unsophisticated technology on the sort of AI interactive voice response sort of front end of that contact center. If you want to interact on the website, they may or may not have a chat bot. Maybe they have something you can text about an appointment, but if you want any more complex information, you can't get it. Imagine the difference in dealing with like an order from Amazon or booking a flight at Delta or some of these other experiences that are sort of very seamless to what the traditional experience is around a health system. So what you're seeing is sort of rapid deployment of sort of next generation AI technology to help with these inbound and outbound communication tasks with patients, because no health system has the staffing or dollars to fund enough people to support the types of interaction volume and variety that they want to enable and that patients want. So you have to use technology to augment the capabilities of people. So Nuance and other people have technology to do this. We have a platform called our Nuance Patient Engagement Platform, which is an omni-channel infrastructure that connects to your EHR, connects to your CRM, like Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics or others, and connects to your telephony infrastructure inside your contact or patient access center from vendors like Avaya, Cisco, and Genesys. What it allows you to do is deploy applications that handle a patient journey. So for example, I want to be able to book, reschedule, and handle waitlist appointments, for example. You can basically have an application that runs on our infrastructure that allows patients to do that in an omni-channel way. So you're not building one app for your call center when they pick up a phone, or a different thing when they're on their website and you're interacting with a chatbot, or a third thing when you're texting. It's all one infrastructure. So from a client's perspective, they only build this app or deploy this application once. And from the patient's perspective, whether they call in, they get a text from the health system or on their website, it's one seamless system that maintains context regardless of channel and language that you interact with. And the benefit of that is you get much higher patient satisfaction rates. You get higher automation rates, which is good for the health systems because they don't have the money to staff up, as I mentioned. And for clients that are deploying this in like the patient access center, they actually increase the revenue because they make it easier to connect open slots for scheduling or follow-ups, preventive, you know, like colonoscopy screening with patients by making it much easier to get connected with those schedule availability. So it really solves better patient experience and drives better economics for the health system.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now, this question may be a bit repetitive for you, but if there are any additional that you'd like to add, what are some tools, whether it be the conversational AI or other forms of AI tools that Nuance provides for a better patient-physician experience? Can you share some of those?
Yeah.
I know you mentioned a few throughout, but if there's any others
that you'd like to share. No, there's one other really exciting area that we and a number of other folks are in that I'll mention, which is this idea of using AI on the pixel or the imaging side. It's a very hot area. There's tons of press around this. So the challenge is the following, sort of set the stage. About 80% of all hospital visits and about 23,000 clinical pathways, diagnostic imaging plays a critical role in the identification and treatment pathway for that disease. Okay. And it's often done early in the clinical pathway, because as you know, you often get imaging done and lab work done early to help figure out what's wrong with you or what can be done. And so the challenge is you have these images that have this massive amount of data in them. And because of staffing shortage with physicians, the fact that they're often read by people that are not experts in that specific imaging modality, and because some stuff is not even visible to the human eye, there are lots of opportunities to use AI to improve not only the efficiency of radiologists and others that look at images, but the clinical value that comes from them. And this can manifest in lots of interesting ways. So let me give you one very concrete example of the value of this. So lung cancer, which you know has got a lot of emphasis lately as the government's tried to focus on better screening, because it's a very high prevalent disease and early intervention has a huge effect. So the data says that about lung cancer is roughly underdiagnosed by 84%. That says that out of 100 people that might have indications of lung cancer, only 16% get screened effectively early. And from a clinical perspective, if you look at 5-year survival rates for lung cancer, if you catch it early in the early stage of the progression, the survival rate's 60%. If you catch it late, it's 6%. So the effects of not catching lung cancer early is massively, you know, there's a massive value on all levels, right? From a personal health perspective to population level to economics, everything. So what happens if you could use AI to look at every CT lung exam in the country, for example, and find early indications of lung cancer and highlight that to the clinician, the patient, using AI as sort of an automated way to do massive scaling that can't be done purely by humans, and then use humans, radiologists and pulmonologists, to look at those scans and say, yep, there's a problem here, we need to do something. It would have massive value. And that's only one clinical pathway. So what Nuance has done is we have 80% of all radiology images are reported in a product we call have PowerScribe. And we have another product called PowerShare, which is the largest image sharing network in the country that allows us to get these what are called DICOM images from basically any PACS or VNA, run them into the cloud and apply AI to them on the pixel side. So we have a solution we just launched called the Precision Imaging Network that leverages this infrastructure to enable us and our third-party partners who produce these AI pixel algorithms to look, for example, at the lung or the brain or the knee or what have you for specific indicators to basically do this nationwide screening for lung cancer. So imagine, again, you go to a hospital, you get a CT of the lung for some, or a CT of the chest for some reason. We run that against AI. We say there's an incidental finding on your lung. Maybe that wasn't even the reason you went in. You went in because you were looking at something else related to the heart or some other part of the anatomy where they did a CT that captured the lung. And we could alert that to say, hey, this looks like there might be early stage lung cancer. There's a nodule on the left lower lobe. Some human should look at that. Well, we can now do that today. So imagine now replicating that across all these clinical pathways where imaging has a high value, and you just see this over and over again. So this is one of the sort of the most exciting areas we think for AI in healthcare because of the ability to really make an impact on a lot of people's lives and along the way drive much better economics, both for the patient, because not only are they clinically not getting sick, but they're not going to have a stage 4 lung cancer. And for the people that are paying the bills, if you can find these diseases early, not only does the patient benefit for and their family, but we save the government a lot of money by not having to treat late stage cancer for lung cancer by catching it early. Because the thing I didn't mention in that prior set of data, but you probably know, is the cost of treating a late stage lung cancer dwarf the cost of treating an early stage one that's treatable. So everything's good, good for the patient, good for the family, good for the economics, good for the overall cost of healthcare. So because imaging has so much of this data in it, it's a really massive opportunity that us and others are trying to solve.
That's amazing. Thank you. Now I will get into a question kind of relatable to what you just mentioned. But first I wanted to know, how do AI solutions like speech recognition and virtual assistants help health systems reach not only the traditional triple aim to improve the quality of healthcare delivered, but how does it reach the quadruple aim?
Well, again, a lot of the difference, you know, on the, I think we kind of covered this a lot before for the, you know, when we talked about the first use case, but and as you know, the fourth thing that got added was clinician experience on the quadruple aim. So as I mentioned earlier, the ability of products like Dragon Medical and DAX, really the data that you've seen, as I mentioned, is that I think 70 to 80% of all clinicians that use our technology report a significant reduction in burnout. And we're now starting to deploy technology on the nursing side. So again, back to this issue of clinicians didn't go to medical school to take notes. They went to medical school to take care of people. So this idea of trying to, in the background, in the more advanced example, this ambient intelligence example, do the documentation for them as an artifact of them doing their normal job, which is talking to patients. That's like the holy grail for clinicians. Now, we can't solve every problem related to burnout. There's issues of pay, you know, control of clinical pathways, you know, other issues that Nuance and AI certainly does not solve. But if you look at every study, the number one cause of burnout is clinical documentation. And so we're going after that big problem. So by being able to reduce by a couple hours a day of clinical documentation time, it makes a huge difference. I mean, Caitlin can follow up. We have thousands of comments from clinicians that are sort of in the spirit of, I actually cried. I forgot what it was like just to take care of people and not have to worry about charting. You've stopped me from retiring. I actually can spend time with my wife and go see my kid's soccer game. It's really, you know, for us that have been in healthcare for a long time, it's a very powerful, visceral thing. You know, we're all in this as business people to make, you know, obviously we want the company to be successful, but the ability to really impact the people that are all taking care of us is really stunning. And for us, we have just oodles of examples of, you know, it's the technology only matters in the outcomes it delivers. And these outcomes on the quality of life for the clinicians that take care of us is really stunning.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for elaborating a bit more on that again. And just giving some patient examples too, which is wonderful to hear. And then I have another question for you. For the health systems that are still unable to have these tools or workflows, what are the next steps for them? Maybe what advice can you give as to how they could possibly overcome any challenges a bit more easier?
Yeah, so every organization is a little different. On the documentation side, again, you know, about 60% of all docs use Dragon Medical today. So most providers already have that product deployed. What we're seeing, sort of the easiest way to start on the next generation with our DAX ambient solution, is they can start with a small cohort, 20, 50, 100 physicians, and they can be up and running within a matter of weeks. And for the clinicians, there is some initial like getting used to the system time, but generally within a few days to a few weeks, they're just having conversations with the patients and it just works. And so it's not a big technical lift. There's not a big set of IT interfaces that have to be built. So that's a relatively simple thing to do. And on the patient experience side, we've pre-built a number of applications that have native integrations to systems like Epic and other EHRs. So it's a relatively quick thing to get out of the box to start with certain use cases, like around the patient access center. They don't have to deploy this very complex, you know, multi-year deployment point of view. And on the imaging side, one of the really cool things, and the providers understand this, is every patient's story starts with an image. And since they already have PowerScribe, again, 80% of all radiologists use PowerScribe today, they probably already have PowerShare. This ability to deploy the precision imaging network already leverages the infrastructure that they have, the BAAs, the security agreements, so they can rapidly deploy one or two of these pixel algorithms on picking a specific use case. And it's a very, very low IT lift. And then they can see what the performance is. It's not like going through this large sort of vendor selection and deployment process, because they already have the base infrastructure in place. So depending on what the pain points are for that provider, there are a number of ways to sort of get to the next level without a huge lift if they want to sort of start to kind of get to that next level.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.